The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
Now, you guys tuned in to Radio Memphis around the world. We have been working fervently to try to get this next gentleman on the phone with us for a live interview at radio-memphis.com. You guys may know Roine Stolt. He is a Swedish guitarist, vocalist, and composer. He has been a major figure in Sweden's rock history. He himself, you know, he's led two of the country's most successful progressive rock bands, Kappa in the 70s and the Flower Kings in the 90s and onward. Well, I also hear that Kappa's kind of making a comeback. Yeah, so with no further ado, we're going to bring Wayne on the phone with us right now. How are you doing, honey? Hello. Hi, how are you?
We are connected.
We are so connected.
This has been
like one of those moments, you know, honey.
And I'm a mighty fine presentation. Thank you.
Oh, you are very welcome. Thank you so much for calling into Radio Memphis. I am Diana Dirty D, and I am joined by Phil Berger to talk with you about what you've got going on. And it's been such a pleasure. It's such an honor to have you spend your afternoon with us here in Memphis.
My pleasure. Well, what's going on right now is actually, let's say, I just started promotion work for this new Kaipa da Kapu album.
I heard after 35 years, you come out of the gate with this.
Yeah. By coincidence, really. There was just like an old friend of ours that arranged a music festival.
Okay.
Somewhere in the middle of Sweden. And he said, you guys played for us 35 or 40 years ago. How do you feel about playing again?
Nice.
And I got a question. I said, yeah, why not?
Why not?
That would be nice to reconnect and learn the old songs one more time, you know, and play them. And, you know, it could be a nice thing. And so we did. And once we played the festival, we were thinking, okay, so we spent this time rehearsing the songs. Why don't we play a couple of more shows? And so we did, and it was great. It was fun.
Wow.
Maybe it didn't sound that fantastic, but you know, it takes time to get things right.
You know,
after 35 years. And some of the guys actually, they have been in the music business, but more like, you know, running a recording studio,
right?
Working in publishing and stuff like that, you know.
Right.
So they've been in the music business, but I'm the only member that's been touring, you know.
You've been doing stuff for quite some time, and you've been in it forever and ever. And
I never give up, you know.
Of course not, and I'm so glad that you don't. Are you kidding? There's so many people that really look up to you and look up to what you've got going on, and they love you, and they love your sound, they love your spirit about what you've got, you know. And just so you understand, what we do here, Wayne, and those of you, and am I saying your name right?
Yes. Roine is fine. I've spent so much time in America now, so I'm Roine.
Are you sure?
I'm Roine.
And I want to say it right, you know, because that is your...
Roine is fine. You know,
okay.
I've adapted to Roine now. It's fine. It's okay.
Not a problem. Just so you understand, Radio Memphis, you know, we are an internet radio station, live radio station. We broadcast over 160 plus countries. And our biggest thing is that we promote the unsigned and indie talent. We actually have really cool relationships, you know, as far as with all our musicians and stuff. We have a lot of people that come in live in studio and perform, and you know, we have so many different deals and programs, you know. And one of the things that's really special to me on being able to talk with you is that this station is really a musician's station, because a lot of artists like to tune in because they know that we get to talk to some really cool people and they want to hear some food for thought. And so when everybody figured out that you were going to be you know, calling in and spending some time with us, you know, everybody went crazy.
I did promise, you know, to dig up the dirt, didn't I?
You did. Well, and see, that's what Phil was sitting there telling me, and it was, you know, and just to kind of go into the deal, I mean, you know, yes, you know, Kappa was your thing, and of course, you know, we got the Flower Kings, and, you know, and that right there, you know, is, you know, speaks volumes, you know, as far as ahead of your reputation and stuff. But, you know, you've done a lot. You yourself, you've spent a lot of time with a lot of really cool people. You've done a lot of tours. You've done a lot of things with a lot of named people, and so you've got dirt. You've got stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
Oh, my God. See, this is easy.
I would say The most, I would say, the most famous people, the most successful people are usually the nicest people.
Nice.
And the people that are sort of in the middle, they can be sometimes nasty. And then you have the people who are in the absolute bottom. Oh. They just started out playing. They're very nice, too.
Okay. So we figure out that, you know, depending upon where you are in the middle of the layer here is where what happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not joking. I mean, I met so many famous people, and they're all very, very, very nice. Very nice people.
You've done a lot of stuff, and of course you've met a lot of things. Yeah. Now, when you became the guitarist of Kappa, one of the cool things is that, you know, and you were very young, you wound up, you know, kind of getting wrapped up and getting picked up by Decca. And that right there is a very historic name to me, you know what I mean? And so, you know, my thing would be, what was it like because that's kind of one of those pinnacle points in your career where things really kind of started getting launched and things really kind of started happening for you.
Yeah, you know, because Decca for me, I was thinking, when I saw the label Decca, I was thinking the Rolling Stones. You know?
Of course, of course.
It was like enormous. That was like something I couldn't even dream of, you know. And
right.
The thing is that I think just about a year before we signed the contract, I could never in my wildest fantasy imagine that I would be, you know, recording an album or let alone being signed to a label like Decca, you know.
Sure.
So it was and being, as you say, I was probably, when we signed the contract, I was probably, could have been 18 maybe.
Yeah, you're a baby.
So that's very, very young. When I look at my kids now, I'm thinking, oh wow, I was very young, you know.
What was I doing?
And very, very insecure, maybe sometimes, and sometimes too, a little bit too secure,
sure.
Perhaps.
But, you know, you guys, we'll get there, don't worry. You guys, you know, you wind up, did you even realize that you were going to be fashioning a sound, you know, or fashioning, you know, a style that everybody was really going to kind of grip their hands around, you know, especially the prog world, especially progressive rock, you know, a lot of people, you know, they have their hands and when they try to do the, what when they go back in their brain as far as what was an influence and what was happening and, you know, what they wanted to do, you know, your groups and stuff that you've been in, come up, you know, obviously you didn't realize that was the impact that you were going to make.
No, not really. I think it's you for me, I don't know about the other guys in the band, but I think for me it was always like I heard something in my head, and then you try to recreate what you hear inside, you know, you hear the sound you want to hear, you know. I would say mainly as a music fan, you know, you're loving a certain style of music, and I grew up listening to the Beatles, of course, you know, and then pop or rock music got a little bit more complicated. You got bands like Procol Harum, Vanilla Fudge, King Crimson came, you know, and Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and Jimi Hendrix Experience, of course, you know, and they developed music, pop music and rock music in a way we could never imagine, you know, when it all started with the Beatles. To be part of all this and to be able to sort of feel the freedom of creating songs and sounds in a way, there was really never a limit, I think, you know. And for each and every band you heard, you know, you hear King Crimson, they do fantastic stuff, you know. You hear Frank Zappa and he's taking music in a completely different direction, and then all the fusion bands like Chick Corea and Weather Report and all those guys, you know.
Right.
And they open up and they show the way. They show you can do this with music, you know, and with grooves and melodies and riffs and stuff and sounds. And so it was a fantastic time, I think, to be around. Actually, we were probably just at the right time. Well, I would say I was at the right time, you know, starting off in music and in the recording.
You were there,
sort of.
Absolutely, and you know, with your time in the beginning, you know, with Kappa, you wind up that you decided that you wanted to step aside, and you actually started another outfit. You started Fantasia. And and that was, you know, that was, you know, obviously something of your creation. And I think one of the things that I found really interesting, and for those of you who have tuned in, we are talking to Aroy Stolt on Radio Memphis Around the World right here at Radio Memphis. One of the things I thought was really funny was that during this whole time period, you've already started making an impact. You already started working with a really incredible label. You've started really working with an incredible group. You step aside. You start doing this stuff with Fantasia. And then you say in your own bio that it was about that time that you decided that you might want to go ahead and start mastering the guitar. And it was like, well, what have you been doing up until this point? Because it sounded pretty awesome.
In my mind, I was probably just faking the guitar playing for many years. You know, I had an idea of the sound I wanted to make. I couldn't really technically understand what I was doing, really. I was just making sounds that I heard in my head, you know.
Oh, wow.
I took very much from many blues players. Of course, Hendrix.
There it is.
Dwayne Allman of the Allman Brothers Band. Peter Green from Fleetwood Mac, you know. I tried to emulate sounds they made, you know.
There it
but
is.
But I, looking back now, I can say I didn't really understand the guitar, you know. I didn't really understand the way how to construct chords and chord progressions, you know, in a big way.
Wow.
I was just like an apprentice of these guys, in a way.
So are you self-taught?
Yeah. Well, I had a few guitar lessons, but I faked them too.
Oh, nice.
I was faking my way, and she could. I had a female guitar teacher. She was very cute and very nice.
Oh, okay. Now I know. Yeah. Oh, I know. Okay. Now I know why you went. All right.
Yeah. So I went there every time, but I was faking my way. I learned the song by heart, and then I looked at the sheet music, but I didn't really look at it. I was sort of looking at my hands and my fingers on the guitar, on the fretboard. And I knew what I was supposed to play, and she looked through it. She said, Roy, you gotta learn to read the scores, you know.
But you actually did.
I gave it up. I gave up after 1 year, you know, when I was, and then at the time I was actually starting Kaipa and we were starting touring, so I thought, well, what the heck, you know, I just go along and play whatever I feel, and if people like it, it's probably okay.
Well, how lucky did you get then? Because people kind of dug it, you know? I mean, that's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. See, yet another person who has shattered my image. Okay, so he naturally does this.
That's two. Adrian Ballou and now Roynaugh.
And Roynaugh. Yeah, I know. There's, okay, two in 1 week. So my mind is getting absolutely blown. Because, you know, Roynaugh, I had this thing where, you know, I almost feel like to be, you know, that brilliant, you know, on that type of an instrument, that, you know, there had to have been some type of, you know, background. There had to have been some type of schooling and stuff like that. But if that's something that naturally comes from you and that's what you hear in your head, it's pretty amazing.
Makes it even scarier.
And let's put it this way: you have to actually put in a few hours of.
Okay, so here comes the rule. Okay.
Practicing and playing, you know. So if you would ask my parents, my mother is still alive. If you asked her, she'd probably say, "Oh, Roynaugh was playing like 5-6 hours a day when he was a teenager. When I was 11, 12,
wow,
something like that. I was with the guitar all evening. You know, when I got home from school, you know, I was listening to." The records, and then I was playing the guitar, and that's about it, you know.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah, I kept doing that for a long time, and then of course when I started touring, you were playing anyway. We were rehearsing every day with Kaipa. I think we were even rehearsing on Christmas Eve, if I remember right.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because there's no such thing as, you know, like, you know, breakdowns and taking a break when you love what you do, you know? Thing about you, Roynaugh, is that you go through this period, and I get this impression that, you know, you have these experiences and stuff, but you're almost kind of searching for something. I mean, you were searching for a very specific sound, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, in kind of learning about you and learning about, you know, what you do and what you've got going on, you know, you did have a thing for symphonic rock. You had a thing for traditional rock. You just busted yourself when you talked about, you know, you really got your dig from the blues, which is amazing, because most musicians, true musicians and stuff like that, you know, they do pull from that thing. You wind up actually pulling some really, really cool people together, and you wind up doing the album The Flower King. guess actually that was came what came first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and so, you know, when you decided that this was the idea, I mean, who was it that you were pulling in to help you make this happen?
Well, the thing is, actually, that what happened was I did lots of commercial music. I was playing sessions, you know, mm-hmm. playing, well, pop music, dance music, anything in studios. And I did it for a couple of years, and it didn't really, it wasn't my thing, really. I realized I was easily bored, you know, because it never turned out. I did the guitar sessions, and I did guitar overdubs, and then when I heard the final mix, you know, it didn't sound the way I wanted it.
I got you.
And it was usually music I wasn't that keen on playing anyway, you know. So I didn't really see a future in that, you know. So I was just asking myself, what do I really want to do? And then I was thinking, okay, I want to play music with more freedom, and progressive rock is kind of music for me that opens up to jazz, to classical, to folk music, to tribal music, or whatever you want to put in. Progressive rock is fine, you know?
Right.
And I like to play the electric guitar. I like to play the acoustic guitar too, but I think the electric guitar is a it's fantastic instruments now with lots of sounds you can make from
all the sounds,
pedals and
yeah.
stuff like that, and you can shape the tone, and you can bend the strings, and you can make the guitar sing, you know, because of feedback and stuff like that. You heard all that, you know, from Jimi Hendrix and all those guys, Jeff Beck and the guys.
That's know. What it did it for you, but, I know.
Yeah, so that's the instrument I want to play, and I want to play music that is orchestrated, you know. So that's what I set out to do with the Flower King.
Set
out. And I just called upon a couple of friends, you know, Hasse Brunisson, who was playing the drums, and who else? Well, Hasse Fröberg was, who then went on to be the singer in the Flower Kings.
Wow.
He was called in for a couple of songs, and there was a new drummer, Jaime Salazar. Well, I actually didn't know at the time, but I was recommended him. I was asking for a drummer that had a nice groove and, you know, had a good sound and all
sure.
that. So someone told me that, well, you should try Jaime. So I connected with him, and he came to record.
Wow.
Drums for the album, you know. And, yeah, and the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah.
I mean, the album was well-received because I was thinking at the time, this, you have to remember, this is 1994,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't really aware of what happened outside of Sweden. I was in Sweden, and I was looking at what happened in Sweden. It was mostly pop music.
Right.
But I was thinking, I don't give a damn. I want to make this music. It really doesn't matter if I sell 500 copies.
Nice.
I'm going to do it anyway, you know, because I like this. So I did, and then it sort of took off, you know. We started selling albums to France, to England, to Belgium, to Italy, to America, to Canada, to South America, to Japan, etc., etc.
And then you went everywhere, yes.
Yeah, and then we started getting offers to play different festivals, etc. So, of course, you put together a band, and you try to rehearse and do the best you can, you know. To represent the music that's on the albums.
Wow. And one of the things about, you know, that you've been quoted as saying, you know, about the Flower King, what you were ultimately trying to do is that you were ultimately trying to put together an idea all in one, whether it was negative, positive, you know, aggressive, you know, volatile, indifferent, you know, amazing, all in one, in one album, what the music business was. And that's a pretty big, statement.
Well, the statement was actually that I wanted to support the good forces, you know, in this world.
Perfect.
And because there was so much negative, there was so much darkness going around, sometimes within the metal circles. I mean, usually these guys, I mean, if you meet the metal bands, they're really nice guys, you know.
Yeah.
They're very polite, they're very nice and friendly. But the image is usually, there's lots of darkness and lots of skulls you know, lots of, I wouldn't say evil, but that's like sometimes like a very negative and black and dark and gloomy
right.
vibe that's surrounding these albums. I was thinking, okay, what can I do that's the total opposite of this, you know? I'll do some hippie stuff, you know, that was 35 years ago, you know.
Love
very,
peace.
Very out of fashion. Okay, I'll be the opposite, you know. So that's what I want to do, you know.
Nice.
Partly because I want to be the opposite to what other people do, but also because I felt it was, you know, I felt the need to do something that was, you know, a statement.
Oh, well, absolutely, and it was going to actually, by you doing that, it was going to make everything stand out, and there was going to automatically bring attention to that, you know, because it was going against the grain and going against the masses.
Yeah.
On that. Now, you get this really working out. You have a very tremendous moment, and you wind up, you know, being part of a super group. And the super group, you know, which I totally adore and stuff. And oddly enough, you know, for me personally, you know, I actually started following you through Transatlantic, believe it or not. Don't get me wrong, I heard Flower Kings and stuff, but it was one of those, when Transatlantic had come together, I had kind of, that's when I really kind of dove into that album and stuff, and then it was like, I made sure I wanted to learn, you know, about each of those individuals that was involved in that group. And so that right there was, you know, I kind of jumped in on that, and I went back into history with you, you know, and came back through, and then I was like, well, no wonder everybody loves him. He influenced everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But Transatlantic comes, you know, comes around, and you decide that you're going to do this group. Now, what was that moment like for you, you know, working with Mike Portnoy and working with Neil Morrison, and you know, that was just something that came about? That was something that you guys sat at a barbecue and decided it was a good idea, or how did this happen? y'all are friends,
Actually, I hadn't met Peter Wawas. I hadn't met Mike Portnoy. I was aware of Mike Portnoy because he was a drummer in Dream Theater. I heard Dream Theater.
Okay.
So I knew he was a good drummer.
Sure.
I never met him, and I never met Peach. I met Neil.
Okay.
In Los Angeles in 97, I think. We were playing the same festival. And after that, I think Neil and myself, we were in contact via email, and he was asking for gigs in Europe. So I was pointing him towards certain clubs in Holland and in Germany. You can try this, you can try, you know, try
that,
you know, festivals and stuff. So I was trying to help him, you know, with that. And so we were keeping in contact. And then this question came up. I think Neil and Mike wanted to put together a band. And I think Neil recommended me for the band. And I think that Mike was aware of me also, because someone
sure
gave
was.
Him an album, you know, and I know they were playing something before the Dream Theater shows. They were playing one of the Flower King songs, I think, Circus Brimstone.
Oh, okay.
Now and again. So, at this time, this was in 1999, I think we came at the perfect time, because progressive rock was already at the rise, you know, with bands like the Flower Kings, mm-hmm. of course, Spock's
mm-hmm.
Beard,
mm-hmm.
Porcupine Tree, some other bands, and it was a really perfect time for a band like Transatlantic to come together.
Absolutely.
When they made the first album in 99. And
that was an insane album. That was an insane
history, as they say. You know, we made now four studio albums, and we made lots of live albums and DVDs and stuff. Whatever you can, sort of get out of a band an idea. We've done them. You know, we've done tours in Europe a couple of times in America,
right.
South America, etc. So, it was like a success story from day one, actually, I would say.
So how is it, I keep going back to the super group and stuff, because, you know, this is kind of where I pick up with Transatlantic. So you guys agree that you want to do this project together, and, you know, you've got some amazing talent all in one band, hence, you know, super group. How do we all decide who was going to start writing and who was going to start, you know, deciding the idea, who was going to come up with the songs, you know, because that's a pretty stout lineup, you know?
It is, I think. And I think we just started the very first album. I think we just started by saying, okay, we're going to meet in the studio in July.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get some demos circulating so we know what we're going to record.
Absolutely.
So we did, and I sat down and I wrote some stuff and sent it over to the other guys, and Neil wrote some stuff and sent it over to the other guys. So we had these song ideas that were circulating, and then we at the time I think Mike said something, he wanted to record a cover song, a very obscure Procol Harum song that he thought that no one knew about.
Right.
But I did, because it was one of my favorite songs. So I think he was very happy that he had one more guy that really loved Procol Harum and really loved this song that we did on the album.
Nice.
And then we just, you know, kept listening to the songs until we came to the studio. And when we came to the studio, we just sort of started digging into whatever we had. And of course, Pete came in with stuff when we were I think we were first time we were actually in New York,
right,
recording the first album. So we were in the studio for about 5 or 6 days, I think, recording the basic tracks. And I mean, it's an amazing band. When we work, we're very effective, very. You know, it's like almost like an explosion of ideas. And,
well, yeah, I mean, you guys
sounds and colors and, you know.
You guys were doing, I mean, and let's talk about the time period that you guys were, you know, kind of really doing that. Again, and you even said it yourself, you know, with the resurgence of, you know, of progressive music, you know, progressive rock,
yeah,
progressive metal, you know, and with all of the things that were really kind of going around, there was this huge, huge underground that, I mean, I personally really thought that the number of people and then the number of fans really kind of outnumbered what was mainstream to me, because everybody was feeding and everybody was wanting this music and everybody was wanting the sound. And there was this massive, huge following for this vibe. And, you know, here you are. You're in the middle of doing this stuff with, you know, Transatlantic, okay? And then, you breathe some life back into the Flower Kings. You guys wind up doing a double, you know, headlining tour, you know, was it, what, 2013, 2012, 2013, where you guys wind up, you know, actually jumping in and mixing all of the music together, which drove everybody just ape, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, my thing is with you is... You do music because you love it. You do sounds because you love what you hear and this is what you feel and stuff. And it never goes back to, you don't ever realize what impact you're making. Right?
No, not really. I we can't just sit around thinking about that we're making an impact, you know, because mm-hmm. that's not why we're not making music to make an impact.
Right.
Because I'm to be honest, I'm making music to entertain myself, you know, to
Perfect.
Entertain myself, because I enjoy playing music, I enjoy listening to music, I enjoy even being in rehearsal rooms. I know many musicians don't, they just want to be on stage, but I enjoy being in the rehearsal room.
Right.
And I enjoy being in a recording studio, so every aspect of it, every aspect, the writing of songs, of lyrics, the production, I just like it all.
See,
I even like sometimes being in a tour bus.
See, at least you said it out loud and you admit
I know
that.
It's bizarre. It's really bizarre. There's something wrong with me, but you know.
No, there's nothing wrong with you. You're the epitome of, you know, what music is about and why you love it so much. Although
I think many musicians are really interesting people, you know. You get to meet really interesting people. And of course there are also some people that are not that interesting, you know,
well,
but they're still musicians, which is fine also, but I think it's an interesting world, you know, and if you stay away from all the craziness and all the drugs and all the drinking and all the crazy stuff,
yeah,
it's actually a very pleasant life, you know.
Same.
You get to travel the world, you need to go, you get to go to places and see different cities and countries and cultures and learn more about the world. Which is a fantastic. I mean, if I've been working in a bank or construction worker, I've never seen what I've seen now. I've traveled the world, you know, many, many, many times. I can't even start to think of how many times I've been to United States, you know, or South America, Canada, and Europe. I can't really think of how many cities in Germany I've been to, or in France, or
you've just been
it's,
everywhere.
It's just
though.
Amazing. Or England, you know. I was touring last year with Steve Hackett, and I was doing like 85 or 90 shows.
Wow.
Around the world, you know, and so it's just amazing how much we get to see and how many interesting and nice people, fans we get to see, you know, and different cultures, different food.
And all the different stuff that you get to do. Absolutely. Now you, of course, you know, in the beginning of the conversation, I mean, obviously, you know, you talk about your influences and you say things, you know, and I've noticed that most progressive, you know, musicians and stuff that I spoke with, first thing right off the bat they'll say is Beatles. First thing off the bat they'll say is Frank Zappa. You know, is there somebody that you do idolize and that you do, you know, really, really pay homage to, you know, as far as, you know, an influence in your world?
Well, I mean, to be honest, that's sort of a bit probably something that's more something you do when you're 15 or
yeah. You
know, that age. It's you idolize people. You look at whatever, John Lennon or Paul McCartney or Jimi Hendrix or whoever you're you know, in love with at the moment. You
well,
know,
yeah, no, I totally get it.
People with great talent like Frank Zappa, of course, you know, and of course, I mean, all the people that I've been working with now, like Steve Hackett and John Anderson.
Wow.
These people, you know, back in my youth that I kind of idolized, you know, I was thinking these guys were almost like music gods, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you realize when you get to meet them and play with them, they're just people like us, you know. They just want to get on with music and have fun and with music and, you know.
Well, considering you opened the topic of John Anderson, I have a question from Mr. Randy George from the Neil Morris Band for you.
Okay.
Oh, yes, Randy says hey.
Yes, he does. He said Godspeed, and he'll hope to see you soon. But his question is, it's two parts. Are you going to tour the Anderson Stolt album? And if you are, can he be on the guest list?
Well, put it this way, I promise I can make a nice deal for him. You know, maybe I can, you know, 50% off the tickets. I'll buy him a beer.
Oh, nice. So out of the whole deal, yeah, he'll get a beer out of it.
He'll get a beer.
Nice.
I'll let him know.
I think he's fishing for the bass play position, isn't he?
You know,
he might be.
You know him. You know him. See, you can't get anything past Ryan. You know him.
Yeah.
We love you,
Randy. Well, honestly, let's put it this way. I mean, John has said many, many times during the 1.5 year we worked with the album, he has said, oh, we got to play this live, and he has ideas about how we're going to play it live and with orchestra and things like that. And just recently, well, a couple of weeks ago, we met in London for a thing, and he was saying again, oh, we got to play this live, you know. But the reality is that he's now out with Rick and Trevor, and they're doing the shows with Arv. What do you call it? Arv?
Yeah, I'm not sure. The ARWH, I guess. So
yeah,
our, you know,
R. sounds like a
par. Something. Yeah, yeah. Perfect.
funny band name. Anyway, I'm thinking that they're out now playing this, and they're probably going to go on for a while. I suppose they're playing now America, and they're going to come to Europe, play shows in Europe, and I think they're going to continue for a few shows possibly in Japan and maybe Australia next year. So
yeah,
I don't know where it takes us, probably at least beyond next summer.
Yeah.
But I mean, where we are now is John said more than 10 times he loved to do this live.
He
has about it.
You're going
so,
to. Yeah, in other words,
I'm just,
you're going
okay,
to.
Whenever he is ready,
you're
and
going.
He has the time to do it.
That means you're going to. If he says it one more time, yeah, you're going to.
I don't mind doing it. I mean, to be honest, I would love to do it, but I'm not counting on doing it within the next, let's say, 6 months or something like that. That's not going to happen.
That was a big, you know, that was a huge announcement, you know, when you guys decided, you know, to get together and actually, you know, make this, you know, make the album and make this music happen. And, you know, everybody in the music world, you know, it was a screeching halt. You heard it and everybody stopped and they're like, whoa, hey, Ryan Stolt and John Anderson and yes, and oh my God, and what's going on? And
it's a great
woo,
album.
Yeah. And, you know, and so, you know, with that, that's, I know you, honey, I know you do it because you love music. But just so you know, if you do get out and go out live and you get out there and you make those kinds of things happen where people can see it, this is another one of those moments in history that I feel like, you know, can actually, you know, push a movement, you know, again. Yeah.
The thing is, I kept it a secret for a very long time because, as I said, we started working on this, I think, if I remember right, after summer 2014, if I remember right.
Hmm.
We started working, but I kept it for a secret for almost a year.
That was
hard. I didn't tell anyone. I mean, the record label knew it, and my wife knew it, but she didn't know. She didn't know it in an instant. She kind of figured out because she heard John Anderson's voice from my studio so many times. She was sort of, you know, after a while, she was figuring out what's happening here.
You couldn't keep it from her.
I had to, you know, I said, Lillian, you got to keep this a secret, but I'm working on this album with John, you know. Well, let's see if it happens. I don't know. I don't know yet if it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Once we signed the recording deal and everything, we could go sort of public with it. You know, I didn't want to do it before that because, you know, it's sometimes you work on something and it didn't sort of pan out the way you're thinking, you know. And I wanted John to be happy with the album and be, you know, in agreement that we were actually going to make an album.
Right. And the fact that you were going to make it work. And again, everybody's really, really ecstatic and they're real happy with this. And it just seems like
it just seems like,
you know, you've actually found your groove. You know, Roy, and you found, you know, you kind of float to an extent, but it's carefully planned floating.
I don't know. If there is a plan, it's not of my making. It's someone else's plan, I would say.
Oh, nice.
sound too mystical here, but I think, as I usually say, it's usually hard work. Each and every day you work and sometimes it's unpaid work and sometimes like 2 years later it turns out to be paid work because
Right. There's
something coming in your way, whatever, a tour or a recording or something, you know. And I'd like to keep an open mind and keep an open eye, you know, to new projects, not only working with you know this old like
you just call them
icon. It's wonderful, but also keep an open eye to the younger musicians and not necessarily only prog musicians because, you know, I'd like to be open to work with people that can inspire me to do different things or pull out things of me that I didn't even know myself I could do.
Absolutely. Do you have a lot of people that try to reach out to you, you know, and maybe say, hey, will you listen to this? Or, hey, you know, do you...
Oh, yeah. I have, but unfortunately, I would say it's mostly progressive rock musicians, and it's usually presenting something that is already stuff that I've done, you know.
Right.
And I feel like I don't want to go down that route again. I don't want to do the same thing because I've been doing this with the Flower Kings. There was a band called Agents of Mercy that I had to get Nat Sylvan, you know, and we were doing progressive rock or symphonic rock in a way too.
Sure.
And the Flower Kings and Kaipa and Transatlantic, and it after a while it gets all you know, it's the same, you know.
It's the same
in
for
a way.
You.
So I'm thinking that if there's something I can do that sounds a little bit different, you know, I'd like to take a chance. If there's someone out there listening, you know, if you have some really weird music, send it to me.
Well, you never know who's listening, Royna. You never know who's paying attention. You never know who may maybe jump in on that. And then you never know whose world that you may enter that will actually change somebody's life. And that's the thing. I mean, so many people I know, there's got, especially the younger group and the younger generation coming up, you know, they've had to reach out, you know, and they'll ask you, you know, oh my God, you know, how can I be like you, what can I do what you're doing, well, how can I do it, and you know, and in this nice conversation that we've had up until this point, you know, you've laid it out with the hard work, you know, and loving what you're doing and believing what you've got going on, and the only thing I might have changed about you is that maybe you went back to that girl and actually took the guitar lesson You never know. You never know what could have happened after that. I'm just saying.
Believe me, I've been thinking about that. And then I sort of contemplate, oh, why? Then I'm thinking, no. I like my weird sounds. I like my feedback. I like my unorthodox guitar playing, you know. I like not knowing what I'm playing, because that's what I'm usually saying to musicians, you know. And they say, okay, can you play a B minor 7, or can you play E13 or something like that? I say, I have no idea.
You're like, what?
Play the notes and I can play it.
That's
the way I work. You know, I hear the music in my head and I listen to the music and I can play it, but I couldn't really tell someone else. Of course I can, if I can sit down and take some time, but not an instant. Like, I mean, someone like Jonas Wengel, who is my bass player, he's an educated man. He can play like sheet music. He can play with a symphony orchestra if he want to.
Right.
He can play with the jazz, and they just, put out the charts and can play it. I could never do that, you know. But we can communicate together in a band because he has the ability to also to sort of play by ear the way we are working in the Flower Kings, for instance. And even with Transatlantic, it's never like written down music. It's just by ear, you know. And I imagine bands like Marillion, they're working the same way, and people like that, you know.
I'm learning.
Well, I've talked about this on the air. The first time I ever saw you live was at the New Jersey Prog House back in like 2005 or 2006, for the weekend with the Flower Kings. And
do you remember the venue? The name of the venue?
They called it the New Jersey Prog House. It was in a little town in New Jersey, and I'm trying to remember if it's.
Because the Prog House could be like there. We once played actually a small house.
That's what this was.
The house was, well, I think it was from like 200 years ago or 400 years ago, I can't remember. Yeah. It was a wooden house somewhere, you know, outside of New Jersey.
Yep.
This one?
Yeah, that was exactly where it was. It wasn't like, a very big place, but it was big enough to put on a great show.
Audience or something like that.
What's that?
It was probably like 45 people in the audience. Or something.
Exactly.
Like that, you know? Yeah.
Great show. I still have a lot of great memories about that.
Yeah.
Real quick. We're trying to get Daniel Gildenlow on here for an interview in a couple days. So I'm going to do the same thing we did with Randy George. If there's a question for Daniel Gildenlow you would like to ask.
What would you want to ask us to ask Daniel?
Oh, what do I want to ask Daniel?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I know quite a lot.
I figured you did.
We've been playing in the same band, of course.
Of course.
And he talks a lot, you know. He talks a lot, Daniel.
You got to come up.
I remember one time we were playing actually with Transatlantic in New York. And I remember we were being in the dressing room. And I think if I remember right, it was actually Mike Portnoy's birthday. And we were in the dressing room. And Daniel was talking as usual and talking and talking and talking. And after a while, Mike has been silent, and then suddenly he says, Daniel, can I ask you something? He says, yeah. Can you please be silent for a minute?
We can't ask him about that, man. He might get mad at us.
And I think, well, he has a sense of humor. You can probably remind him of that.
So what would
that awkward moment, you know.
So ultimately, what you want us to do is ask Daniel that the one particular night when you guys were actually doing stuff with Transatlantic, and it was Mike Portnoy's birthday. We want you to tell us what Mike Portnoy asked for his birthday.
What his birthday wish was that night.
The thing is, it's great to play on your birthday. Actually, I've done that a couple of times, and I think Mike didn't mind playing on a birthday. Just that Daniel sometimes can talk a lot, you know. As you will notice when you talk to him. He's more than me, you know?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but it's nice. Daniel is a super nice guy. He's one of the guys that I hope to work with on a new project coming up kind of a secret project. Oh. Not so secret anymore because
you just gave it away, which is awesome.
we won't mention it.
Well, the thing is, Danny is one of the most talented people, and I'm not saying this just to kiss ass. It's actually true. He's a super talented guy. He's one of my favorite singers. He's an okay guitar player. He's an okay keyboard player. He can play the drums. I think he can play actually about any. I haven't heard him play saxophone. So that's probably the question.
Yeah, maybe we need to ask him to play some saxophone.
He can play the saxophone.
All right, so then that's what he needs. He wants to know that if he can.
You can even ask him if he can play it Roland Kirk way, meaning you can play a couple of saxophones at the same time.
Not a problem. Not a problem. We're gonna say that you have a request, and the request is, can you make that happen? Not a problem. We can do that. Well, we can do that, honey.
But honestly, Daniel is a super talented guy, and I, as you probably know, he writes great music too, and he's a great frontman.
Definitely.
So Danny is always the guy I'm thinking, this guy should be something, you know, he should be, you know, among the big, big stars, you know.
Perfect.
It hasn't happened yet, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed, you know, and I think he's really the guy designed to be a big, big rock star.
Nice.
Actually.
See, that's quite the endorsement.
Yeah, definitely.
It's honest.
That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. You have been amazing. I want to thank you so much, Wynut, for calling and spending some time with us. You know, we spin your music now. And, you know, if there's anything that we can do for you here at Radio Memphis, you know, and Radio Memphis around the world, you need to let us know. You know, we're definitely going to enjoy keeping up with you. And who knows, you know, we are probably going to bug you now that we've developed a relationship, you know, and get some dirt. Because you have dirt.
Well, there wasn't much dirt this time, but maybe next time.
Well, you know,
we'll dig deeper next time.
We had to get to know each other. You know, there's ground rules, there's etiquette, man. We got to dance a little bit, you know, have dinner, that kind of stuff. And after we had the dinner, you know, the dinner drinks come
in.
Then
I'll dig out the dirt, yeah.
So you've already figured this out. So it'll be, by the way, do you by chance know? Absolutely. I know you need to probably get on about your afternoon. We thank you so much for spending some time with us here.
Would you play some of my music?
I am going to play some of your music. Absolutely. In fact, I have got one or two songs.
Pronounce it.
You're an ass. I'm sitting here going, he's like, pronounce it. I'm like, well, shit.
I have a confession to make.
Hold on. From absolute beginners to advanced players.
Wow. Hold on.
Plugged
into Radio Memphis.
Okay, there. I just turned. See, that's what you get for messing with me, Phil.
I have a confession, Rona. I tried to learn a couple phrases in Swedish last evening, and I tried to learn a couple phrases to ask you.
Okay.
In your language, I speak a little German, but I could not pick it up whatsoever.
Okay.
I sat with the app on my phone listening, and I'm like, man, I'm going to make myself sound like the biggest jerk on the face of the earth.
No.
That's what I'm doing all the time. Imagine me.
Yeah, true.
Speak English. You know.
You do great.
Well, okay, so
I'm trying.
You sound fine. I feel like I can talk to him all day. I mean, he sounds like one of my family members. You know, it's all good. You know, I'm looking at, is it Detista Gildet?
What?
See? I just mutilated your song.
Off the album, the newest album you sent me, I believe.
Yeah. Uh-huh. D-E-T, that, deet, that, Tista, T-Y-S-T-A.
Ah, yeah, the Tista Gold. It is the silent gold.
Detista, how do you say it?
Detista Gold.
Detista Gold.
Detista Gold. It means the silent gold.
Oh.
And we're thinking of like the world is now run by the banks. You know, that's what the lyrics is about.
Oh.
In Swedish, of course. You can't really follow, but
so you're totally like into that secret society stuff, aren't you?
No, not really. But I mean, no.
Throwing it out there.
I mean, if you look at it, it's like I think it's actually whoever has the money runs the world.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
You can buy anything. You can buy politicians. You can buy anything. you can buy governments.
Wow. Well, yeah. I have that. But I like the way your title, it makes it sound so nice and so pretty, you know, and not so evil. I will listen to it. We love playing your music. So, yes, I am going to be playing some stuff from your album. And, of course, anytime you've got anything coming up or announcements or anything like that, you're always more than welcome to come on or let me know. Yeah. And we'll definitely talk about it here on Radio Memphis.
Yep.
All right.
Very cool.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Renna.
Man, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful evening, honey. And again, like I said, we'll talk soon. I got a list going in my head. Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Okie dokie. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Renna Stolt right here on Radio Memphis Around the World, radio-memphis.com. What a cool dude.
Yeah.
He was cool, very cool. He's got a lot of very, very insane stuff coming up, and that's one of those you're just going to have to follow him. You're going to have to follow his path. You're going to have to follow who it is that he's working with. But in the meantime, you know, what we need to do is let me at least play a song for you guys from him and from his band. It's a Kappa de Kappa, and how did you say the title of the song?
Datista Golda. I don't know if that's right, but that's what it said.
I'm gonna let you go
ahead. That's the closest to my pronunciation.
I'm gonna let you fall on the grenade.
Just do it this way: the silent gold.
Okay, that was easy.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.